So good evening, everyone. It's Greg, and we are here with Frank and Ryan from Reverie Brewing. If you listen to us at all, you know that Reverie is my home away from home, and even more so lately. I think I go to the supermarket once every 3 weeks, but I go to Reverie once a week to pick up beer. So there we go. It's the evening recording, so we have a little drinky here. Ryan and Frank, welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Yep, no problem.
What we wanted to do here is talk a bit about what's going on right now with the pandemic, and breweries are changing the way they're doing things. So I went back today, guys, and I listened to the first time we had you on the program, which was published on April 22nd of last year. So it's a little over a year ago. And I thought you'd find it funny that I think, Ryan, you mentioned on the podcast that you had just released your 12th beer at that point. You guys had been open for 8 weeks. And I think that 12th beer was Soak Up the Berries, which you just put out again.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time. A lot has changed. You guys had your 1 year anniversary. And then society shut down. So that didn't help. But we want to get a feel for just how this has affected the business, what you've done to pivot with the situation, and kind of what you expect to happen when things get back to normal, if normal is even really a thing that's going to happen. So, you know, first and foremost, volume-wise, how are you guys still brewing to the level that you were brewing before? Or have you changed that up a bit due to demand changes and just your ability to get product out there?
So we are, I would say we actually had to increase our volume. It's not too much of a change, to be honest with you, because it's been a 2 month shutdown. So we, and oddly enough, had just started going to retail stores right before the shutdown. So we had full capacity of the brewery, which was 100 barrels. And we canned all that, which was great because we had a bunch of cans ready to go. And then I think it was about 2 weeks later, we shut down. So I was scrambling to sneak some beers in before the next canning run that we were planning. And those were planned to be on tap. And then, like I said, it was about 2 weeks. We were like, all right, well, I guess we'll keep the canning run. We got a little mobile canner in, and we decided to double batch a couple of beers that we weren't going to double batch. And that really probably was the main increase. So, we did do a couple double batches. Last week we did another 100 barrel canning run, but because of the tap loss, we were able to figure out a way to can everything out of the kegs with low DO issues and sell that in cans. So ideally, I mean, if this kept going on with a shutdown for a whole year, we would absolutely have to keep production up probably higher than what we would plan, because tap rooms are number one sale. But we're hoping that we'll be doing some more single batches instead of double batches every time, and not shortening production runs as we have been doing.
Yeah, I would echo kind of what Frank said. I think a little bit of it was timing. We kind of got really lucky, you know, not lucky. Nothing about this has been positive or good. But for us, having our 1 year kind of in our rearview mirror, and we had kind of been planning for March anyway to go out, you know, not crazy heavy, but a little bit into local distribution to some liquor stores. So we had some brews lined up to get us through, you know, not only the tap room for March and April, but then also, you know, we had only really done some four packs to go from you know, our place. Now we're looking at, you know, hopefully selling a couple hundred cases a month to package stores. And that kind of lining up with when all of this started kind of let us shift, instead of, you know, kegging 75% of the beers and canning 25, we did the opposite. We kegged 10% of the beers, maybe 20% of the beers, and kind of put everything into cans. And so I know Frank will agree. I feel like the first 3 weeks we worked way harder, you know, we were brewing more, but then also we're spending a lot more time packaging because it's so much easier just to kind of mass, you know, keg everything into half barrel kegs than it is to actually package into cans, both from a manual labor standpoint and from a cost standpoint. But so, you know, we were a little fortunate, but we were also able to shift really quickly.
And you absolutely had the volume there. I mean, I've noticed, well, let me back up. when you guys are operating normally, there's usually a new release every week or 2 weeks. That doesn't seem to have changed. So, I mean, you had a good pipeline going. It's been a problem because every, you know, Wednesday when you, or Thursday, you post something on Instagram. I look at my wife and say, I have to go beer shopping this weekend.
So, if anything, because the setup that we had was the idea of scaling to retail at some point. So we're a 10-barrel brewery with 20-barrel fermenters and a bright tank. So a lot of times those fermenters are half full. So luckily for us, we were able to just, you know, do the double batches, fill up the fermenters, and kind of keep that release schedule.
And listen, to be honest, it was just, that first 2 weeks was pretty scary because we had to make a decision, like, you know, we've got these 4 or 5 beers planned. Do we want to double them? So, you know, you're talking a couple $1,000s for each beer to add, you know, as the government's telling you, you need to shut down your tap room. Do we want to invest in making more beer? And then do we want to spend the money to rent a canner and invest in cans, all not knowing whether or not they're even going to let us keep our tap room open? So we actually had some early emails with some of the reps locally, you know, our state reps, and we're just trying to get answers. Like, hey, if we're looking at, you know, $X thousand worth of capital expenditures, can you give us any insight as to if we're at least going to be able to sell out the door? And to be honest, they were pretty helpful and doing everything they can, to be honest, and letting us know ahead of time what was going to, you know, happen as far as they could. So.
Hadn't thought about that yes, you didn't know if you'd be allowed to continue
selling. Right, that's the big worry. You spend all this money, we double batch, like Frank said, 100 barrels worth of beer, and then all of a sudden they say, well, not only is your tap room closed, you can't even sell to liquor store, the closing liquor store. We didn't know, and that first 2 weeks, everything was changing every day so quickly, right? So.
Yep. Oh, it was. I was at your place a few days before they shut everything down, sitting outside. It was a beautiful day.
Yep.
You know, a year ago, I remember you guys saying that your intent was to sell in the tap room within town and you'd get on tap at restaurants outside of the local area because you didn't want to cannibalize, you know, what was going on there. But to your point, now you've got cans in every store. Mm-hmm. Do you see that continuing when things go back to normal? Will you pull back on what's sold in a physical package, you know, right around the corner from the brewery? Or do you think that now that you're out there, this is, you know, this is the future?
That's like a two-part question. I think the first part is I have no idea what normal is going to be when we get to open back up. So, you know, if the new normal for 6 months to a year is we can open the tap room, but we're only allowed to sit outside, or you're only allowed to have 15 or 20 or 30 people inside, then yeah, we're going to absolutely have to keep going. And then liquor stores are going to have to be our focus. But, you know, if hopefully a vaccine or some sort of, you know, whatever happens down the road, or we get back to some normal, then I think all the lessons we've learned and the relationships that we've made with distribution, Frank and I have been doing it on our own, calling places, driving around. Frank's kind of got the western half of the state and I've kind of got the eastern half. You know, those relationships and that kind of network is going to just only help us once we get the tap room back too. So I don't really know. I mean, I don't know if Frank would have anything to say, but the tap room's been it's our bread and butter. It's where we can experiment with beers. It's where we can, you know, just the cost to put a beer in a can versus on draft is so much different. And I don't know, pass it off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just on top of that, like, we're big fans of having the variety and trying new things. obviously, you know, we get customers all the time. We're like, oh, why isn't this beer back on tap all the time? We'll bring them back. We always want to bring them back. But the seasonality and the variety, I think, is something that's a differentiator for us, given the local kind of breweries that you have in the state. And we're only just learning what retail stores want. And I'm actually surprised by some of the retail stores' willingness, especially through all this, to just order beers and they're even tasted when we first start. Yeah. Like when Ryan and I first started, we were doing retail sales right before the shutdown happened. And, you know, you had schedule tasting and like do all this just to get in the store. But some of those accounts are becoming great accounts and they just kind of trust what we're doing, and they'll just order. I don't know if that's just cause and effect. People are just buying whatever, or if that's going to last after this. But if we can keep up the variety in retail as well, personally, we haven't really discussed this because it's like we said, we're flying by the seat of our pants. But personally, I'd love to be able to do that and be seen as a brewery that does that. Especially we have a brewery opening up across town. I'm going to have to, we like them, they're friends and everything, but we have to have some type of difference between us. We can't both have the same beers and whatever going to retail. I don't know. It's crazy. It's crazy right now.
I think people are drinking a lot more.
Yep.
For better or for worse, that's been a reaction people have had to being stuck in the house is I'm not driving anywhere today. I can start drinking at noon.
Yep.
And the other is that I think especially local folks, they miss coming into the tap room, and this is a way to bring the tap room home to them.
Yeah, and we actually, to kind of pivot a little bit, we were kind of surprised. We had started some delivery service, and you really see on the nice days, like the to-go curbside just explodes because I think people feel like they want to get out of their house, and they're not getting out of their car. They're just driving from their house to the brewery, popping their trunk, paying on their phone and then going home, but they get that car ride, away from to themselves to some music or some thoughts. And so we thought the delivery would be a little more than it is. In reality, it's like people almost kind of want to get out a little bit. So
I love getting out of the house right now just to go run errands like that. And I've been bringing my kids with me when I come pick up my beer to force them to get out of the house.
Yep.
Being able to look down a road and focus your eyes is different than staring at a computer all day.
Yeah. Just,
even if they never leave the car.
Yeah.
So I know what this is because I've been doing it a lot, but can you describe to us your curbside pickup process as well as the growler exchange that you've got going on, just what you've done from a safety perspective?
Yeah, so the curb – so not to give away a free ad, but we switched our point of sale system. That was redundant because of point of sale, whatever. We switched our point of sale in January to Toast. And as soon as this whole thing started, they basically gave all of their restaurants, bars, breweries, whatever, whoever used their software, 3 free months of online gift cards and then online ordering. And we basically had to, invest only in our own website and the time and effort to set that up. It was basically a flip of the button to upload our beers for curbside pickup. And what the website allows you to do is you go in and you can pick a day or a time, pick the beers you want, order, a ticket prints out right at our bar 5 minutes before you're supposed to get there, and whoever's working can just run it outside. So that was the software has been amazing. And another fortunate timing thing for us. And then for the growlers, I think most breweries are doing this. I know some states aren't even allowing people to bring empties back. We're not refilling anybody's growlers. If you have a Reverie growler, we'll take it back. We'll sanitize it, clean it ourselves. We're going to give you a fresh one. And that's just so that our staff's not handling a dirty growler. The dirty growler's not touching the faucets or anything like that over, near the taps. And, if you come in with another growler from another brewery, in past times, we would always fill it. But now we're just making you buy a Reverie one just for everyone's safety.
Makes sense. It absolutely makes sense. Do you have people showing up and saying, oh, I'll come in, it's okay, who aren't getting the distancing thing? No?
No. I mean, Frank printed out a huge thing right when this all started, basically above the front door that says, do not enter the brewery, in like big letters. And we actually put 2 tables in front of the door. You've seen it. 2 tables in front of the door and then basically those like little ropes on the side. So you really, really have to be like going out of your way to get inside the brewery.
Yeah. We actually, I was brewing on Monday and we haven't been open on Mondays because we don't get that many sales. But there was a guy, I sold a couple of beers because I'm there, I'm going to sell them. We're legally allowed to do that. But there was a guy who, he didn't even teeter around that. He came to the window where he could see me brewing and, just tried to get my attention because he had been waiting out there for a little while. But, yeah, in general, I think most people are respecting that at this point.
I think at this point they are. About a month and a half ago, I did curbside pickup at the Burrito Shack at the southern end of town. And there was someone who was just trying to open the door. All the signs on the door say, don't come in, call this number. This person just was not getting it. When it comes to, obviously right now, the big thing is Lysol, Clorox. You can't get your hands on it. You've got to sanitize everything as you're working through the process. You do as a normal course of events. Are you having trouble finding those materials?
Yeah, I mean, isopropyl alcohol is the thing that's gone the quickest. We have about 2 gallons of it left ourselves. Our new chemical supplier was able to get us a new commercial grade hand sanitizer. But the big thing we use to sanitize everything is peracetic acid. That has not been depleted, realistically, because, it's food grade. It's what, like a poultry company would use it. It's food grade sanitizer. So everybody uses it realistically and it's not something that's being used as like a hand sanitizer. It's not something that's used as a alternative to like other things that are being depleted. And it's sold at a very heavy concentration. Can't get it on your skin or anything. You got to wear goggles and masks with it, everything. So we've been using it at a little higher concentration than we probably would normally to kill everything, because I haven't been able to find any information on what kills COVID from the concentration level, but from what I can understand from other viruses, we're pretty much definitely killing it. But we also use heat as well in our processes. And we're actually changing over our growler process as well, and we're going to be using heat to kill anything that's on that, because anything above 180 degrees is not going to survive realistically. So 180 degrees, peracetic acid, PBW, whatever, it doesn't matter. We're going to kill it. I mean, you come into the, when this all started too, and I know this was, one of the things I was like, well, we live in a sanitized environment. that's what we do. So, we, not to say that they're obviously like the idea that they're finding like a cough can spread it more quickly than they had realized in the beginning, but we wear face masks, we wear gloves, we wear anything that, rubber boots and everything like that anyway. So the addition of like just the extra chemicals and the higher concentrations we're using is just definitely, an extra factor in preventing any spread.
What about your general brewing ingredients? I mean, so much is a mess right now in terms of logistics of getting more or less anything. Are you having any trouble getting the grains you need, getting the hops you need?
Deliveries with the hops are a little different because they use FedEx a lot. And so, we had to get them to confirm that you were open and all that. But we haven't seen that problem. Actually, Ryan, the hops come in today?
Not when I was there.
I should check that, see if that happened. So hops have been a little bit difficult to get delivered, but that's more of logistics with FedEx. Everything else, grain, chemicals, anything we need has not been an issue. And additionally, it seems like a lot of other breweries, just from my conversations with the suppliers, they're not in the same situation we are. Like, you can look at like a brewery that's like, I don't know, you look at like even the guys at Black Hawk down the road, they had to reduce their brewing because they're not supplying as much.
Or anybody that's relies heavily on, concert venues or stadiums or bars, right, to do their, majority of, draft sales.
Yeah, so we're definitely at a good place right now with being able to procure anything that we need. And we did a big order of the hops early on because we decided to do all that. The hop company reached out because they were trying to get a hop contract out of us. But they were like, oh, looks like you guys are doing great. You want to buy more hops? I'm like, oh, all right. But yeah, we in general, we have done, it sounds like, there's no shortage of supplies. We were nervous with the can guys because we heard Crowlers ran out. That ran out quickly. We don't do Crowlers. We do 16-ounce cans. We're starting 12-ounce cans for – we actually just brewed a seltzer to increase the variety. But the can company said they're not in any fear of shortage either. So that was like our first one.
One of the more local grain suppliers we use is called Thrall Family Malt. They're from South Windsor, Connecticut, and I was actually talking with them last week or this week. I think the breweries as a whole, as an industry, at least in Connecticut, took a a kind of a step back the first 3 weeks this went on. And I think now are starting to figure out what their actual to-go sales can be like, what the taproom model is going to look like, curbside, what liquor store reorders are going to be like. So they, at least, this is a very small malt supplier, has said the last week or two is starting to pick way up more than it was at the end of March. So I think as people kind of get their feet underneath them and figure out what the new normal is, which, like I said, changes every day, but that, you know, that's kind of what we're seeing or hearing from suppliers as well.
And we actually lost one of our local, there were two malt suppliers in Connecticut, and the other guy, he actually has his in Bethel here right next to Newtown, but he stopped production, but he works full times too. So it was just too, and they just had a kid. So it was too much with the shutdown and not knowing. So we're hoping to get their malt back as well.
What is it with this industry with all you guys having babies all the time?
Probably the beer, man.
That is probably it.
And if we had babies before this, we might not have a brewery. So
exactly. Yeah.
So Ryan, it's interesting you say that the Connecticut breweries, the ones you know, are figuring this out, because everything we're seeing coming out of the Brewers Association are scary numbers about many tap rooms that, you know, I don't recall the numbers off the top of my head, but a large percentage that are only going to be able to make it 4 weeks, 6 weeks before they just can't stay open anymore. But what you said earlier dovetails well into that about the fact that you guys don't have, you know, most of your sales were tap room, which you're turning into can sales. You're not relying on the bar sales and the keg sales. That was never a huge percentage of what you were doing. So that's not a huge loss to you, at least I think comparatively.
Well, I can't speak obviously to anybody else's balance sheet or what their financial situations are like. I do think we were about 90, I don't know, take this for, we were a brewery that just had been open a year, right? So if we were 5 or 10 years down the line, then obviously our situation when this happened would have been drastically different. But we were about 90, 95% on premise. And that was in part for just having a very thriving tap room for our first year and not having the resources or really the need yet to bring kegs across the state or to go to liquor stores. So I think the breweries that, like I said earlier, that had it, you know, whether it's 5 or 10 or 20% of their revenue earmarked every month to the Xfinity Theater in Hartford or the Yard Goat Stadium or anything like that, even just chain restaurants or restaurants in general, they're going to have, they're figuring out ways to, you know, maybe that's cutting back on employees or on brews. But the other people, the little guys like us, and a lot of other local breweries have, you know, I think been a little bit easier for them to pivot to this curbside model. And it's a lot more work for a little bit less money, but we're lucky that we're kind of in the situation that we're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we kept the team small too, even since the beginning. Like, it's not many people that make the brewery run. So that was super helpful because you didn't really have to consider, you know, laying anybody off. And we don't have a restaurant either, which is a huge part of the impact with some breweries, I can imagine, with the shutdown. And some that we've talked to that have restaurants. So we, you know, we lost the food trucks because the town won't let us have them. But food's not a part of our business model.
Yeah, and even just with, like, this reopening plan or whatever it's going to be, we still don't really know. Like, for us, our overhead is the brewery, the ingredients, the power to you know, the electricity and the propane. And then, you know, Frank and I, you know, and Mark, and we have, you know, a couple employees. I mean, that's really it. And if we needed to open for sales, we could do it with a couple owners there and maybe 2 or 3 paid employees. You have, you know, speaking outside of the brewing industry or even some of these breweries that have restaurants as well, you're talking about a 15, 20 person kitchen just to open, and you're supposed to sit them outside. Is it, you know, how many seats can you have outside? What if it rains? So it's, like I said, going back, we're kind of in a little bit more fortunate situation, I think, just by the, you know, operating the tap room the way we have it set up isn't that labor intensive.
Yeah, very nimble. You've got a finite number of things you need to look at in order to make it work.
And most of them we're paying for whether or not we're open anyway. So it does. The incremental cost for us to open to the public is a lot less than a lot of other places.
Hmm. Nice. So in terms of your engagement with the local community, I mean, you are, as Frank mentioned, there's one other brewery in Newtown that just opened up during the pandemic of all times to do it. What are some of the things that you're doing to keep your regulars engaged and interested?
So we have, over last summer, we started trivia. Some positives, some negatives to that. But once this whole started, we decided to try like virtual trivia. And, you know, honestly, it's like a net zero from the money we make off of it versus what we get back and what we have to spend on it. But it's a way to keep the customers involved, engaged, and you see some of the same people come back every week. It's also good marketing, and just keeping your name kind of out there in the forefront. I don't know, Frank, you want to talk about the golden ticket and then the relief beer?
Yeah. I mean, so from the beginning, one of the things that we wanted to do too was just get the variety back in cans, because again, that was something like. When we did our first can run, it was four beers. It was two IPAs, peanut butter wee heavy, and a pilsner, which meets certain flavor profiles. But realistically, we knew that's what our sales looked like, and we wanted to get that variety back in cans. So once we got up, it took us a couple of weeks to get that going. Once we got it up, we saw a sales definitely uptick from that. So the variety was the first thing I think we did. And then we also did a relief beer. Right when it started, I was going to do an experimental IPA, and we were just talking like, oh man, what the heck are we going to do? We just got shut down.
17, like the week of St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Days after we were told to shut down. Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we basically had the ingredients and the hops and everything kind of planned out. And we're like, you know what? It's experimental IPA. Why don't we invite some of the community to invest into the grain and the malt and stuff? And then, use that to offset some of the costs for the actual ingredients, but then we'll use the beer to sell and take the profits for local businesses. So we actually are, I mean, we're looking at right now, sales are almost done with that beer. We're looking at about $10,000 worth of giving back to the community, which again, I don't think a lot of breweries can do, which is a big part of keeping the community involved, showing them, we're given stimulus checks to, what is it, 20 different businesses, right? So yeah, we're basically trying to do whatever we can to keep the community engaged. That was one of the other things. And then we also did a blended beer. It was like a staff thing that we like to do, which was the wee heavy with the ethyl formate that you're drinking right now, the raspberry porter. Mm-hmm. Yep. So yep. We did a limited release of that. Just come get a mixed blended growler of the two beers that the staff likes to drink. And then to the other thing Ryan just said, we were doing this kind of golden ticket promotion where the last three beers we released, underneath the four pack holders, you can find a gold, a silver, or a bronze ticket, which will either win you a case of beer, a four pack of beer, or like, you know, some small merchandise or whatever it might be. But that's one of the things we're doing. I think in general, you know, we, our hours, our delivery, you know, just kind of passion to stay open, and be available to people during this is something that is received really well. I mean, like I said, we were closed Monday and people showed up, but the fact that I was there and they all, like, everybody who showed up was like, oh, you're not open today, I'll leave. I'm like, no, I'll sell you beer. Don't worry. And so like when we're there, they know that, we're kind of this small team that will, you know, we're here to help them, obviously, because they're helping us, but we've been very engaged on social and whatever we can.
Yeah, we get kind of screwed when we don't release a new beer, because then I get all these Instagram messages saying, what's the new beer this week?
Exactly. Yeah. And then they come and buy their favorite beer anyway. They probably don't buy that beer, but
I'll stop abusing you on those weeks. I apologize. And
there's more coming. We're trying to, I'm actually, you know, we're in talks now with a couple of local restaurants to try to do some like Friday to go meal type things, mixed with a four pack, whether or not that gets off the ground. We'll see now that they're all kind of focusing their shift, their sights to May 20th. But I agree with, I'm going to echo what Frank said, the variety and He kind of had the like the ability to, when this first started, the person that we used for our real mobile, like our big run mobile canning, had a small two head filler, and Frank basically that day rented it from the guy. We've used it almost 4 to 5 times a week since the middle of March. And he was just up last week saying like all these other breweries are asking for it. So a little bit of foresight there to kind of, and that was allowed us to get all of these beers that we had already brewed into cans as quickly as possible. Which I think we did a really good, like by the end of March, we had 15 beers in cans. 2 weeks earlier, we had 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that, you know, and like you said, people just like, they like change. They like new beers, like try new things. So.
Mm-hmm. I will say with the small business relief, and Ryan, I know you know this story, and I've told the story on the podcast, but folks in the community rallied around that, were, you know, buying pay it forward 4-packs so that folks showing up at the brewery would get a free one when they were buying other things. And, you know, I was the beneficiary of that, and I took that and I delivered it to a good friend of mine who's an ER doctor as kind of a thank you for what he's been doing. So it's contagious, that kind of stuff, that giving back.
So we had a couple people do that with cases. They wanted to buy a full case and leave 1 6-pack behind or 4-pack behind for the next 6 people. But 3 liquor stores locally have all, without us asking them, Nick's Chilled & Distilled in Sandy Hook, Yankee Wine and Spirits up next to Big Y, and then Southbury Package Store, all 3 of them are donating money back from that beer sold to our relief fund. And actually Yankee for the month of April and May is donating from a dollar for every Reverie beer sold in their store. And they've got 12 of them right now, not asked for. And so those 3 guys, and they've been selling a good amount of beer. And just like you said, it's just the people trying to help where they can.
Mm-hmm. It's great to see. Last question here about what's been going on. Where do you think things are going? Ryan, you keep saying things are changing every day, and I agree, things are changing every single day. The 20th is the date that they're now saying things will open in a limited capacity, so maybe outdoor seating. I mean, any thoughts about where you think things are going to go? We're not going to hold you to this.
Not really. I mean, I don't know. I think it's going to be a slow start, and I think we as a brewery and as a part of this community need to make our place as safe as possible so that people feel comfortable coming back. I think that's going to be a huge part of it. You know, if people act out of line or start not practicing social distancing, or they're coming in too big of groups or misbehaving, and that gets, you know, then that's just going to make people kind of shy away. So it's on us to keep the place as clean as possible, to really enforce social distancing rules, to work with the town, figure out what we're allowed to do and what we should be doing. But I don't know. I think that hopefully somewhere we land somewhere in the middle where we can have kind of a functioning tap room, but people are still supporting the takeout business through either to go or their package stores. But I don't know. I don't really have a crystal ball.
Frank, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to reiterate what Ryan's saying, we met today, and I actually just quickly pulled together like a floor plan for what we think we could do, and sent it to the guys based on what we talked about, because we're trying to look at it. But our number one concern, obviously, is safety, because you know, we have plenty of customers come by that want to come back. We want them back, but from, you know, I think the customer's perspective, they're thinking singularly, and they're like, I just want to come. We have to think of a whole, right? And that's the challenge with the pandemic right now. If we can increase our capacity, which we want to do, because obviously that helps our sales, to outside seating to 60 people and do it safely, we want to do that. But at the same time, now you have 60 people with different dynamics that how do you keep them in control? And you're serving them alcohol too, right? And that's part of our job as well, is to make sure people are being safe drinking alcohol. So you kind of have a twofold system working here, which is, you know, not normally what you're planning for. So it's a tricky situation. We welcome it. We want it to come, but, you know, I think we still have to be responsible in our approach, and, you know, hopefully not offend anybody, which is very tough to do. Mm-hmm. In a situation where people have been pent up for 2 months.
A tap room with no TVs, and our whole point this whole time has been put your phone away and go talk to somebody or strike up a conversation with your neighbor or watch the band. Yeah. And now we're going to have to be basically policing, like, no, you can't go over and sit next to that table and start talking to them. Or you should, you know, so that's going to be a really weird dynamic, and it's going to be hard for our staff, I think. It's going to be hard for everybody.
It is. And it's not like you're going to get an audience of folks that all feel the same way about it. You're going to get people that are dying to get out of their house, who don't think things are as bad as other people think they are. And, you know, one of the things that you'll probably end up seeing that all hospitality industry will see is you've got X percent of folks that are back out there. They're in. They want to do things. They want normal. And then you've got some percentage of your former audience who knows when they're going to feel comfortable walking back in anywhere again. So where that line is, I don't know. Nobody knows. You know, what percent of your business you'll get back on day one versus on day 60 versus on day 360.
Yeah, that's where I think like keeping it as safe as we can, as clean as we can, and enforcing the rules as much as we can will help people as they start to get out think that Reverie is a safe place to go. It's a controlled environment. I know I can go there with my family and sit outside and not be near anybody else. And I think that's really all we can do for the summer. Who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what's going to happen this fall, this winter, next year? But for the summer, I think that's kind of what we're focused on now.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good plan, as good a plan as you can have. So we have to end our conversation with another round of Beer the Name.
All right, I got to go. Frank's got all these.
All right, Frank. So now you guys have been going through your range of IPAs, and all of the names are ooh a something. It's usually a cute animal. You've had, ooh a waterfall is the current one that you've mentioned that has been a big hit. And I think ooh a woodchuck is currently out there. You've had ooh a blimp, ooh a kitten. There's been all these ooh a somethings. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to throw you a little bit to the left here. What would ooh a hickey be like?
Ooh a hickey. It's funny. I am literally sitting here playing right now with potato head lips from my daughter's potato heads and making them kiss while you were saying that. let's see. Ooh a hickey. Oh, dang. That's going to definitely have to have some type of dark fruit in it, whether that's from the hops. I actually know I could do a fruited IPA with that. So I could, you know, I could go with like apricot or plum or something like that in an IPA, just to give it like some, I don't, you know, it's gonna have a tinge to it. So I don't know. I'd do a fruited New England style with maybe apricot puree. Yeah, apricot puree. I'm going to go with that.
Nice, nice. Quite appropriate. Okay, here's one from James. Pixie Spit.
Pixie Spit. Pixie's my favorite band, so yeah, it definitely should be super tart and sour. That's going to be a sour of some type. Some type of, ugh. God, and I hate lactose sours, but it's going to be a lactose sour. With Pixies. I don't know. What's something that, you know, I'd probably do something weird with it, like funfetti cake or something like that. You know, throw the sprinkles or whatever into that for the extra sugar content and the color. Not that it's going to add any color. But yeah. Just for the marketing aspect.
Then it would just be like a Pixies album cover as the...
I would never do that to them. I would never. They would hate that.
That might be, Frank, that might be the first beer of yours that I wouldn't even try. okay. Last one. Mouth-breathing knuckle dragger.
Mouth-breathing knuckle dragger. All right. This is a triple for sure. this is a triple. It's definitely an IPA for all the IPA lovers. Yeah, mouth breathing knuckle dragger. You know what?
Yeah, a little heat on it. Triple jalapeno.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's good. I like that, Ryan. Yeah. Yeah, we do a triple ghost pepper. Fuck it. Just go to ghost pepper. Yep, that's what it is. It's undrinkable.
Wow. That might be the second one of yours that I would not actually
say. Yeah, right. You try it all, Greg.
And you know me, I've got a fridge full of your stuff. I was telling James the other day that there are so many eggs and containers of milk in my beer fridge that I've had to be very careful about what beer I can fit in there. It's cramping my style. Guys, thank you. Great insight into what's going on. We're thrilled to hear that things are going, you know, as well as can be expected with everything happening. You know, I'm looking forward to once again being in the brewery and raising a glass with you both. So
back to Wednesday nights, regular Wednesday nights.
Yep, back to dance night. Wednesday dance night.
Dance night.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining me, guys. I miss you, and we'll see you soon.